We had some Fortune 500 clients, and we did good work. I was crystal clear on what we did. And I could tell you how we were different and how we did it. Like everyone else in the game, I would try to convince prospective clients how we did it, how we were better, how we were unique. And it worked. The truth is, we beat the odds because of my energy, not because of my business acumen. But I didn't have the energy to sustain that strategy for the rest of my life. I was aware enough to know that we needed better systems and processes if this business was going to sustain itself. I was incredibly demoralized. Intellectually, I could tell you what I needed to do. I just couldn't do it. By September 2005, I was the closest I've ever been to, if I wasn't already completely depressed. My whole life, I'd been a pretty happy-go-lucky guy, so just being unhappy was bad enough. But this was worse. The depression made me paranoid. I was convinced I was going to go out of business. I was convinced I was going to be evicted from my apartment. I was certain that anyone who worked for me didn't like me, and that my clients knew I was a fraud. I thought everyone I met was smarter than me. I thought everyone I met was better than me. And any energy I had left to sustain the business now went into propping myself up and pretending that I was doing well. If things were to change, I knew I needed to learn to implement more structure before everything crashed. I attended conferences, I read books, and I asked successful friends for advice on how to do it. It was all good advice, but I couldn't hear it. No matter what I was told, all I could hear was that I was doing everything wrong. Trying to fix the problem didn't make me feel better, it made me feel worse. I felt more helpless. I started having desperate thoughts, thoughts that, for an entrepreneur, are almost worse than suicide. I thought about getting a job. Anything. Anything that would stop the feeling of falling I had almost every day. I remember visiting the family of my future brother-in-law for Thanksgiving that year. I sat on the couch in the living room of his mother's house. People were talking to me, but I never heard a word. I was asked questions. I replied only in platitudes. I didn't really desire or even have the ability to make conversation anymore. It was then that I realized the truth. Statistics notwithstanding, I was a failure. As an anthropology major in college and a strategy guy in the marketing and advertising world, I had always been curious about why people do the things they do. Early in my career, I started becoming curious about these same themes in the real world. In my case, corporate marketing. There's an old saying in the industry that 50% of all marketing works. The problem is, which 50%? I was always astounded that so many companies would operate with such a level of uncertainty. Why would anyone want to leave the success of something that costs so much, with so much at stake, to the flip of a coin? I was convinced that if some marketing worked, it was possible to figure out why. All companies of equal resources have equal access to the same agencies, the same talent, and the same media. So why does some marketing work and some doesn't? Working in an ad agency, I'd seen it all the time. With conditions relatively equal, the same team could develop a campaign that would be hugely successful one year, then develop something the next year that would do nothing. Instead of focusing on the stuff that didn't work, I chose to focus on the stuff that did, to find out what it all had in common. The good news for me was there wasn't that much to study. How has Apple been able to so consistently outmarket their competition over and over and over? What was Harley Davidson doing so well that they were able to create a following of people so loyal that they would tattoo a corporate logo on their bodies? Why did people love Southwest Airlines so much? They aren't really that special, are they? In an attempt to codify why these worked, I developed a simple concept I called the Golden Circle. But my theory sat buried on my computer files. It was just a little pet project with no real application, just something I found interesting. It would be months later that I met a woman at an event who took interest in my perspectives in marketing. Victoria Duffy Hopper grew up in an academic family and also has a lifelong fascination with human behavior. She was the first to tell me about the limbic brain and the neocortex. My curiosity piqued by what she was telling me, I started reading about the biology of the human brain. And it was then that I made the real discovery. The biology of human behavior and the golden circle overlapped perfectly. While I was trying to understand why some marketing worked and why some didn't, I had tripped over something vastly more profound. I discovered why people do what they do. It was then that I realized what the real cause of my stress was. The problem wasn't that I didn't know what to do or how to do it. The problem was I'd forgotten why. I had gone through what I now know is a split, and I needed to rediscover my why. To inspire people to do the things that inspire them. Henry Ford said, "If you think you can or you think you can't, you're right." He was a brilliant why guy who changed the way industry works. A man who embodied all the characteristics of a great leader, who understood the importance of perspective. I wasn't any dumber than I was when I started my business, probably the opposite, in fact. What I had lost was perspective. I knew what I was doing, but I had forgotten why. There is a difference between running with all your heart with your eyes closed and running with all your heart with your eyes wide open. For 3 years, my heart had pounded, but my eyes had been closed. I had passion and energy, but I lacked focus and direction. I needed to remember what inspired my passion. I became obsessed with the concept of why. I was consumed by the idea of it. It was all I talked about. When I looked back at my upbringing, I discovered a remarkable thing. Whether among my friends at school or professionally, I was always the eternal optimist. I was the one who inspired everyone to believe that they could do whatever they wanted. This pattern is my why, to inspire. It didn't matter if I was doing it in marketing or consulting. It didn't matter what types of companies I worked with or in which industries I worked. To inspire people to do the things that inspired them, so that together we can change the world. That's the path to which my life and my work is now completely devoted. Henry Ford would have been proud of me. After months of thinking I couldn't, now I knew I could. I made myself a guinea pig for this concept. If the reason I hit rock bottom was because my golden circle was out of balance, then I needed to get it back in balance. If it was important to start with why, then I would start with why in everything I did. There's not a single concept in this book that I don't practice. I stand at the mouth of my megaphone, and I talk about the why to anyone who will listen. Those early adopters who hear my cause see me as a tool in their arsenal to achieve their own why, and they introduced me to others whom they believed I could inspire. And so the law of diffusion started to do its job. Though the golden circle and the concept of why was working for me, I wanted to show it to others. I had a decision to make. Do I try to patent it, protect it, and use it to make lots of money, or do I give it away? This decision was to be my first celery test. My why is to inspire people to do the things that inspire them. And if I am to be authentic to that cause, there was only one decision to make, to give it away, to talk about it, to share it. There would never be any secret sauce or special formula for which only I knew the ingredients. The vision is to have every person and every organization know their why and use it to benefit all they do. So that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm relying entirely on the concept of why and the naturally occurring pattern that is the golden circle to help me get there. The experiment started to work. Prior to starting with why, I had been invited to give one public speech my whole life. Now, I get 30 and 40 invitations per year from all sorts of audiences all over the world to speak about the golden circle. I speak to audiences of entrepreneurs, large corporations, nonprofits. I speak in politics and in government. I've spoken at the Pentagon to the Chief of Staff and the Secretary of the Air Force. Prior to the Golden Circle, I didn't even know anyone in the military. Prior to starting with why, I had never been on television. In fewer than 2 years, I started getting regular invitations to appear on MSNBC. I've worked with members of Congress, having never done any government or political work prior to starting with why. I am the same person. I know the same things I did before. The only difference is now I start with why. Like Gordon Bethune, who turned around Continental with the same people and the same equipment, I was able to turn things around with the things I already knew and did. I'm not better connected than anyone else. I don't have a better work ethic. I don't have an Ivy League education, and my grades in college were average. The funny part is, I still don't know how to build a business. The only thing that I do that most people don't is that I learned how to start with why. Chapter 14. The New Competition. If you follow your why, then others will follow you. Bang! The gun fires and the race is on. The runners take off across the field. It rained the day before and the ground is still damp. The temperature is cool. It is a perfect day for running. The line of runners quickly forms a pack. Like a school of fish, they come together as one. They move as one. The pack sets a pace to maximize their energy for the whole race. As with any race, in a short period of time, the stronger ones will start to pull ahead, and the weaker ones will start to fall behind. But not Ben Komen. Ben was left behind as soon as the starter gun sounded. Ben's not the fastest runner on the team. In fact, he's the slowest. He has never won a single race the entire time he's been on the Hannah High School cross-country team. Ben, you see, has cerebral palsy. Cerebral palsy, a condition often caused by complications at birth, affects someone's movements and balance. The physical problems endure for a lifetime. Misshapen spines create a twisted posture. Muscles are often withered and motor reflexes slow. Tightness in the muscles and joints also affect balance. Those with CP often have an unsteady gait, their knees knock, and their feet drag. To an outsider, they may seem clumsy or broken. The pack pulls farther and farther ahead, while Ben falls farther and farther behind. He slips on the wet grass and falls forward into the soft earth. He slowly picks himself up and keeps going. Down he goes again. This time it hurts. He gets up and keeps running. Ben won't quit. The pack is now out of sight, and Ben is running alone. It is quiet. He can hear only his own labored breathing. He feels lonely. He trips over his own feet again, and down he goes yet another time. No matter his mental strength, there is no hiding the pain and frustration on his face. He grimaces as he uses all his energy to pull himself back to his feet to continue running. For Ben, this is part of the routine. Everyone else finishes the race in about 25 minutes. It usually takes Ben more than 45 minutes. When Ben eventually crosses the finish line, he is in pain and he is exhausted. It took every ounce of strength he had to make it. His body is bruised and bloodied. He is covered in mud. Ben inspires us indeed. But this is not a story of when the going gets tough, the tough gets going. This is not a story of when you fall down, you pick yourself back up. Those are great lessons to learn, without a doubt. But we don't need Ben Komen to teach us those lessons. There are dozens of others we can look to for that. An Olympic athlete, for example, who suffered an injury just months before the games, only to come back to win a medal. Ben's lesson is deeper. Something amazing happens after about 25 minutes. When everybody else is done with their race, everyone else comes back to run with Ben. Ben is the only runner who, when he falls, there's someone there to help him back up. Ben is the only runner, when he finishes, has 100 people running behind him. What Ben teaches us is special. When you compete against everyone else, no one wants to help you. But when you compete against yourself, everyone wants to help you. Olympic athletes don't help each other. They're competitors. Ben starts every race with a clear sense of why he's running. He's not there to beat anyone but himself. Ben never loses sight of that. His sense of why he's running gives him the strength to keep going, to keep pushing, to keep getting up, to keep going and going, and to do it again and again and again. And every day he runs, the only time Ben sets out to beat is his own. Now think about how we do business. We're always competing against someone else. We're always trying to be better than someone else. Better quality, more features, better service, always comparing ourselves to others, and no one wants to help us. What if we showed up to work every day simply to be better than ourselves? What if the goal was to do better work this week than we did the week before, to make this month better than last month, for no other reason than because we want to leave the organization in a better state than we found it? All organizations start with why, but only the great ones keep their why clear year after year. Those who forget why they were founded show up to the race every day to outdo someone else instead of to outdo themselves. The pursuit, for those who lose sight of why they are running the race, is for the medal or to beat someone else. What if the next time someone asks you, "Who's your competition?" we replied, "No idea." What if the next time someone pushes, "Well, what makes you better than your competition?" we replied, "We're not better than them in all cases." And what if the next time someone asks, "Well, why should I do business with you then?" we answer with confidence, "Because the work we're doing now is better than the work we were doing 6 months ago, and the work we will be doing 6 months from this point will be better than the work we're doing today." Because we wake up every day with a sense of why we come to work. We come to work to inspire people to do the things that inspire them. Are we better than our competition? If you believe what we believe, and you believe that the things we do can help you, then yes, we're better. If you don't believe what we believe, and you don't believe the things we do can help you, then no, we're not better. Our goal is to find customers who believe what we believe and work together so that we can all succeed. We're looking for people to stand shoulder to shoulder with us in pursuit of the same goal. We're not interested in sitting across a table from each other in pursuit of a sweeter deal. And here are the things we're doing to advance our cause. And the details of how and what you do follow. But this time, it started with why. Imagine if every organization started with why. Decisions would be simpler, loyalties would be greater, trust would be a common currency. If our leaders were diligent about starting with why, optimism would reign and innovation would thrive. As this book illustrates, there is precedence for this standard. No matter the size of the organization, no matter the industry, no matter the product or the service, if we all take some responsibility to start with why and inspire others to do the same, then together we can change the world. And that's pretty inspiring. And a final note from me. If this book inspired you, please pass it on to someone that you want to inspire. Thank you.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Start With Why, How Great Leaders Inspire Everyone to Take Action. Written and read by Simon Sinek. This program was produced by Common Mode. Directed by Paul Fowley. Text copyright 2009 by Simon Sinek. Production copyright 2010, Gildan Media, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.